All right, we are digging for wisdom. Not very much time left for this podcast to last, my man. It's a sad time of year. We got 2 weeks left, but we do have state semifinals coming up. Professor Dix has got all the picks. I'm sure he's got some receipts to collect, because I know you got a little backlash last week from some of your picks, and you're almost right on target with a lot of them.
I have a lot of receipts, but I'm going to give you a receipt war to get started out with, because you are like the epitome of the no fun league. You, sir, we need you. I'm gonna air some dirty laundry right here on the Digging for Wisdom podcast, because I can do that. I was taping another podcast right before here, and we had a special link. And I was trying to get Ward to kind of come on and hijack us and have some fun with these guys and kind of gang up on them, a little bit of DFW 2-on-1 attack. We got some East Texas guys who are doing like TV stuff out there. We got TV guy Ward here. Look at TV guy Ward over here. And he would not do it. He's like, man, that's their podcast. I don't want to mess with them, kind of a thing. He's the equivalent of the referee at the Toler Marlin game who threw the flag on the 60-member Marlin band for playing during the game. That's what you are, Ward. You are a line judge who does not like fun. And I don't like you right now, Ward.
Well, come
so
on, man.
I'm a little mad at you. And, you know, and you can talk about Duncanville or something, or talk about Belleville. I'm mad at you, Ward.
Listen,
come on, man.
If I could have got you to help me with these boys' homework, I've been all in it, man. But you never want to help me. You're the one who's known as the professor.
I can do statistics. I'm a literal college professor. People don't know that. They think this Professor Diggs name, like, oh, that's what he calls himself because he thinks he's a high school football expert. No, I'm a legitimate college professor.
And
I just
happen
to do high school picks on the same side.
You won't help these boys with the daggone Truman Doctrine and all this other nonsense that I got to dig around and figure it out. But instead, you want me to play around on somebody else's podcast.
Teach about psychology. And there is so much psychology right now in high school football. It is crazy because we're seeing winners become losers and losers become winners right before our eyes. And just the psychology of that South Lake Carroll and Byron Nelson game this past week, where you had Carroll just playing at this high peak, feverish level. It reminded me of Gunner and Brock earlier in the year, where Gunter was almost taunting Brock and saying, fight us. We want you at your best. Bring it. And Byron Nelson, very much like Brock, was like, no, we good. Don't, you know, we don't want that smoke right now. And Southlake was just begging them, trying to get into a fight. They were just saying, we want this. We want to get better. And Byron Nelson just could not handle it. And how much do you see that? I mean, I think we talked on this podcast that we thought that North Crowley should legitimately be a 3-4 score favorite over Allen when you look at what happened. That was that kind of a fight. Teams that you don't expect to get to that next level right now are going to that next level. That's what we're going to talk about today, to see if we can figure out where maybe some of these surprises are. I know J-Mac and Step and a couple call this the cruelest round. I don't know if this is the cruelest round. They say this is the cruelest round because if you make it to next week, you've done all you can. You win or you lose, but there is no more tomorrow, regardless of that win or lose. But this week, you were almost right there. But to me, this week, you know, I feel like last week was that week that you got to prove yourself. You got to win the region. You got to beat people in your own backyard. This week, you know, you're playing somebody else in somebody else's backyard, and you really don't know what you're going to get. You know, sometimes we have region one and region two kind of close to each other. And we get to these other sports, like we're going to get into, like basketball, when they reseed in the state semifinals, and you don't know who you're going to be playing until you look at the records and whatnot. So I kind of think last week was that coming out round. And I ran some analysis, Ward, and the average point victory of all 40 games last week, all 40 games that we picked six-man UIL was 22 points. And I know you saw some kind of, you know, bad games out there in Waco when you're seeing church ball, because right now the good teams are just elevating to that next gear.
And what about the psychology of that Sock Lovejoy game? I mean, tell me the psychology there. We both said this, if it's going to happen, it's going to be this year, and they folded up again. And it was never a game at all. So
I mean,
what's the psychology of a team going?
It was never a game. It was. I mean, there was a point where Lovejoy had three straight drives in South Sauk's 10-yard line. They convert those. We're talking 21-21 at that point. But they didn't get held. And then they started going for it. I mean, the game gets ugly quick because what do you have to lose? It's not style points at the end of the day. When you know, it's the kind of game where it's 4th and 12 from your 8-yard line, you still go for it in the fourth quarter. And then you give the ball, you know, the Sauk on the 8, and they keep scoring and they take care of business. But at the end of the day, Peyton Pierce got hurt, and I think he was not healthy coming into the game. That's not an excuse. That's just an observation. And at the end of the day, the 11 aggregate of South Oak Cliff were just tougher, fit, more physical in the line. And it's weird because I think of South Oak Cliff, and South Oak Cliff 2 years ago, I kind of considered that the Kevin Jennings year because he was such a special player that he just put him on his back and they kind of led him to victory. Last year, I think talent-wise, they were just the best team on the field, talent-wise, and they kind of use their physical nature to win the game. This year, even watching that game, I feel like, you know, they don't have all of this. You know, they have good players. I'm not saying that. But I think of their three teams, this is their best team. They have bought in, and they're playing at such an incredibly high level that where they don't realize that they're not all D1 kids right now. And they are playing at an incredibly high level. Those coaches have them believing. And right now you talk about the psychology of belief. They think they are the state champions, and they are, really. They're reigning and defending for 2 years. But they're playing like it, and they believe it. And that belief is such a huge factor at this point. They're going to be an incredibly hard team to stop, and that's why we picked them number one to start out with, because they have that mentality. And Coach Todd is doing an incredible job. And, you know, you can talk about what coaches should say. And Coach Todd, he's not afraid to, you know, say whatever is on his mind at any given time. And yeah. I like that about him. But, you know, he talks about Lovejoy, and he's like, it's not about them. It's about us. And that's their mentality. How can we get better? And Coach Ward was talking in a couple of interviews. He's the defensive coordinator at South Oak Cliff, that it's coming together for them. You know, right now, their goal is to get better each and every week. And right now, their defense is coming together in an incredible way, and they completely shut down Lovejoy. Now, and that was Lovejoy with Parker Livingstone back there. And they have that belief system. And their offense is ticking. They're playing physical football. Danny Green is playing good football. I don't know if that's going to spoil what we're going to talk about when we talk about 5A Division II. But South Oak Cliff as a team is playing one of the best team football games I'm seeing right now.
And nothing bothers Jason Todd. It's different. We talk about that corridor down there, and there's a couple teams in that corridor have adopted us against the world, and it doesn't seem like it's like that with Todd. He marches out there. You look at him in the face. It's the same way he looks like on the podcast, other podcasts he's on. Just nothing bothers him. He knows what his team's going to do. He knows what he has. They fall down a little bit, or their secondary plays bad against Lovejoy. Or, I mean, against Melissa, they're still going to find a way to win. He's just that confident. And I think that we talked about it, that Melissa game, I think it plays off into the fans too. They don't get too worried about any game that they're in, because he just knows at some point they're going to make the plays to win the game, and they do. And they'll let you know about it at the end of the game. They won't have to worry about everybody against us, because nobody's against them. Most of them fear them.
Absolutely. And, you know, like I made a Twitter post about it. I went down there after the game and I took my flack from some of the coaches, and then they gave me hugs and they thanked me. And, you know, I explained what I saw and they explained what they saw. Kind of, we got a little X's and O's talk, and we hug it out and we move on to the next week. And I don't think I'm ever going to pick Lovejoy against South Oak Cliff again for a while.
Anybody.
And at the end of the day, and I say this with all sincerity, I think we're going to see a lot of changes at Lovejoy coming up in the next a little bit. I think they've peaked. I think, you know, they're graduating that really good senior class that started a couple of years ago. I know they've got a couple of dynamic players in the pipeline coming up, but it's not going to be like it is right now. I think Lovejoy is going to take a couple of steps back. They're a playoff team. We're not going from hero to zero by any means, but I don't think they're going to be in the serious conversation as a state champion like they were this year and last year.
All right, well, let's get started at 6A Division I. It's Duncanville. It's North Crowley. It's Saturday, 3 o'clock at Mesquite Memorial. I was one of very few people on the sidelines for Duncanville Spring Westfield, and I was on the sideline for a half, and then I was in the press box with my feet up, drinking some water and having some cold pizza or whatever they had up there, because you look at the games that Duncanville played this year, you take out some games like Legacy and Lake Ridge, where they – kind of could just go through the motions and win those games. This game against a team that was supposed to be of their quality or a little bit less, it seemed to be a men against boys. They had literally no competition from a state-ranked team, and that was from the get-go. Not a drop of competition from Spring Westfield. Eventually, Westfield, like they did 2 years ago, started fighting with each other on the sidelines, try to fight the Duncanville players, start yelling to coaches for calling dumb plays. The whole thing was they just got out, man. They got outplayed. Poor Caden Durham got his 9 carries and sat down for the rest of the time. They really rolled when you and I both needed them to show us what they can do against Westfield so that we knew what was going to be in the possible rematch number 5 against North Shore in the final. But then you have North Crowley, who struggled against Allen, but they did get the W, and they are in this match that we thought they'd be in. They get to play them over at Mesquite, which seems like a longer drive for them than it is Duncanville, but I don't know how that triangle works on that deal, but it seems like it's a little smaller little angle there for Duncanville than it is for North Crowley. But tell me what you think is going to happen in this game.
Yeah, I think, you know, that the reason they picked Mesquite Memorial is just because of the stadium, and they can hold it, and you can have all the fans there, and I think a lot of people are going to show up for this game. I think that regionally they're going to show up for this game. It's going to be a fun game. I think Fort Worth is going to show up. North Crowley has kind of been adopted as Fort Worth's team. You're going to see a lot of Fort Worth ISD and even some Crowley High fans over there who are all going to be supporting North Crowley. But I said it 2 weeks ago after I saw North Crowley against Prosper, and it was that I looked at them. I got down on the field, and I was standing next to them. And I remember doing this with Duncanville last year, and I remember looking at some of the Duncanville players going, man, they're bigger than I am, and I'm a big guy. I'm 6'5", 360. And I'm looking at them I don't want to come across them in a football field, or just, you know, they are big men. They are just – massive hunks of humanity there. And then I was out there at the North Crowley game, and I'm walking by him. I'm like, oh, I'm bigger than him. I'm bigger than him. I'm bigger than him. And I was like, well, they're very athletic. I'm sure they could run 40s faster than me. But at the end of the day, they don't got Duncanville size. That was kind of my takeaway from that game and going down there and walking among the Giants or lack thereof. So I think you got North Crowley, who's going to have to play over their head against Duncanville. And this is the first time that they've had to do that. And I think this is where their lack of a good schedule and the lack of them playing the DeSotos and Duncanvilles of the world are going to hurt them, because, you know, we talk about Duncanville. They've looked across the field. They've seen North Crowley. They've seen, you know, really good teams. North Crowley has not looked across the field and seen a team at the level of Duncanville, or even anywhere close. I mean, even their playoff road, Allen and Prosper have not been the best versions of Allen and the best versions of Prosper that we've seen even in the last 10 years. I think Duncanville, very much like they have in some of these other state semifinals, is going to win this game by at least 4 scores. I think Duncanville is going to hit them hard, and I don't know if North Crowley is going to be able to answer the bell. I know Coach Gates is going to have them ready, and they're going to play this podcast for them because they look for the disrespect, and they're going to find all the people out in the cyberspace who are saying exactly what I'm saying, that they're not big enough for Duncanville, that they're not strong enough for Duncanville. And I think you're going to get a good quarter out of them, but I think they're not going to be able to take the repeated body blows. I think you're going to see Duncanville win a 49-21 kind of a game.
I wonder how Ashton Cyril will do in that game, because you look at the stat sheet and the kid from Westfield, Taji Atkins, he got well over 100 yards, but that was a lot in the second half when they had already shut it down. He got a 38-yard run early in the game. I wonder if Cyril's even going to be a factor. Is it a deal where they got to kick it outside to get around these big edge rushers, or how's he going to even get those yards that he's been getting this whole year?
And that's going to be tough. And, you know, Cornelius Warren came back in the game. I don't know what kind of impact he's going to be able to have in this Duncanville game. He was kind of shown sparingly. I think Searle was still kind of their feature back in that game. So you're going to have a two-headed monster. But I don't think the answer is any different for either of them who are going to be in there. They're going to have to find ways to generate space, do creative, against-the-grain kind of plays. Because I think, you know, they will probably have a couple of plays where they try to pound it. Let's see our bigs against your bigs and see how it all works. And if the answer to that is not good, I don't know if they have a plan B, because where's Duncanville's weakness? You know, it might be in that area, kind of like what DeSoto was able to expose. DeSoto was able to run against them, but they were able to, they have a bigger line than North Crowley, and they were able to kind of push to that linebacker level, which might be Duncanville's weaknesses, that little area between the secondary and the line. As can you get there consistently? I don't know if North Crowley has the talent to get there consistently.
And I'll echo your words about North Crowley bringing the fans. They weren't there for the Keller game, but they didn't really need to be, even though it was a home game. They weren't a big crowd there, but what we saw at Prosper and then the highlights I saw of the Allen game, they had that side of the stands just absolutely stacked. And Duncanville's finally home. They don't have to go to Round Rock to see them. So, and I think that place is going to be popping, and if you can get over there, please do. I won't be there. I'll be going up at Allen for DeSoto Southlake. I think you'll be there as well. But the winner of that game takes on the winner of Austin Westlake and North Shore. They're beaten yet again. I think last year North Shore knocked off Westlake. They beat them on their 54-game winning streak they had going there. They had won three straight state titles, and including one time they got past North Shore in the state semifinal. But they're meeting again. And when you look at Westlake, you immediately look at their defensive stats. They've 12 of their 14 wins, they've held the team to two touchdowns or less, five shutouts. But all those kind of defensive stats get tossed out when you play North Shore, because North Shore is just a different animal than anybody they've seen before. Now, North Shore has struggled at times in the playoffs. They haven't played two full halves except for the game against Cy Fair. They almost jacked around against the Taskasin, to be honest with you, down at half, but they hit you with sets in spurts. They hit you with Caleb Bailey. I mean, you got to have a spy on him, and when you have a spy on him, that's going to leave somebody free to get open, and if you don't have a spy on him, he's taking off, and they hit you with a quick spurt. Like, they'll get 21 points in 3 minutes, and then all of a sudden you're trying, your head's spinning around, you got your coordinators yelling at each other up in the press box trying to figure out what we got to do to stop this team. You can't let that happen if you're Westlake, or it's going to be a runaway for North Shore. They're going to win by 14-21. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen again. I'm thinking they're heading back to AT&T. Do you have any thoughts on that matchup?
I'm going to get your thoughts, because you're the Houston producer over here. You don't like that fun, but you do know your Houston football. And the point you made is the point I'm concerned about. And I'm kind of concerned about it with Alito, and I'm kind of concerned about it with 40. And it's just the whole idea of being able to play 48 minutes. And sometimes you have the issue of playing 48 minutes because you're like Duncanville and you just can't get a game where you can play 48 minutes. And the one game they played this year, DeSoto, they lost having to play all 48 minutes. But then you have a case like North Shore that they just kind of take a half off. Or they take a quarter off, and and I've been seeing that. I see them down at a couple of times in the game, and then here comes North Shore, and they come roaring back, and they kind of take care of business at the end of the day. But at what point, and South Oak Cliff had the same problem coming up until the Lovejoy game, where they put it on for 48 minutes, yeah. And then you get one of these games like 42-0. You're like, oh, that's what South Oak Cliff is capable of. Have we seen that with North Shore? Have we seen that North Shore 48-minute game yet, where we're looking at that and going, oh, that's what North Shore is capable of? I haven't seen it yet.
Well, it happened in round three, that Cy Fair one. They just put that team to bed. The three out of four games, it hasn't. But Willie Gaston, you brought up South Oak Cliff. He's very similar to Jason Todd. Nothing seems to really bother him. They could fall down to a Clear Springs or be tight in the game with Deer Park or be down 14-0 to Atascocita, and it just doesn't bother him because he looks on the sidelines and sees what he's got. Now, that's not going to work. In the last round, he's going to have 48 minutes. Same with Duncanville against North Shore. They're going to have 48 minutes if those two meet up again. But Austin Westlake is not a slouch. They're probably equivalent to Atascocita. So they're going to not need to take a smack in the mouth like they did from Atascocita, because this time, they're not in their home confines of the Houston area. They're out in Pflugerville. They're in Pflugerville, right? They're playing at the field. The field. So they're going to need to jump out and play a strong first half. If they want to slug around in the second half, they can. But that's a defense that'll tighten up on you if you let them. And I don't know if North Shore wants that to happen.
So if we have a situation here, I'm just going to give you a hypothetical. If like against Atascocita, where they get down in the first half, are you more worried or is it just the same? You think they'll come back in the second half if Westlake gets up on them like Atascocita did?
I feel like they'll come back. I'm not going to be as worried. As long as it's not too far ahead, Like that was 14-0. I guess it ended up 14-6 before they went to halftime, but I wouldn't be too worried about it. It's just that switch, man. That some teams have it, some teams don't. And when you have the talent like they do, and you got a division, you know, the 5-star Devin Sanchez in the backfield to make big time plays, it's or in the back defensive backfield, I meant. But I just think they have that switch, and I'm not going to worry about it. Now, if you tell me it's 14-0 after three, and they haven't scored yet, then I'd be worried. But I can't imagine them not scoring through three quarters. I mean, through three, I think they'd be up by 15 by then. We'll see.
I'll probably be taking North Shore as well. But, you know, it's very funny because one of my friends, Lamont, who is part of the Dub podcast, you know, he is very confident that DeSoto is just going to beat South Lake Carroll. And he is like, oh, I'm not worried about that. But then he's wondering who's going to win between North Shore and Westlake. And I wonder, and I kind of question him, like, do you understand the irony of what you're talking about? Because Westlake and North Shore is almost a carbon copy of what DeSoto and South Lake Carroll is at the end of the day. When you're talking about demographics, you're talking about the pedigree. It's very, very similar to what you're going to have here. But he's not worried at all about DeSoto. But he's like, North Shore, I'm a little bit worried about that. And I'm like, you know, you should really consider what you're thinking about here, Lamont. It's a very similar kind of a game. I guess that kind of leads us into DeSoto versus South Lake Carroll talk. And there have been a couple of images posted, videos posted of South Lake Carroll over the last couple of weeks. And you are just seeing their offensive line just have these huge gaps. I mean, it's like they are just pushing their opponents to where you just have Graham Knowles just standing back there being able to look and see whatever he wants to see without anybody giving him any sort of pressure, and he's able to pick apart them. And some of the holes that Davis Penn was able to run through against Highland Park, you and I could at least, you know, get through the holes before we get run down at the end of the day. South Lake Carroll's offensive line has handled this challenge, but they haven't seen anything like what they're about to see with DeSoto. And I think when you take that out of it, and all of a sudden you are now having constant pressure in your backfield, and you're getting beat up at the line of scrimmage, it's going to be a completely different game. So for me, the question is, can South Lake Carroll's offensive line handle DeSoto's defensive line and linebackers the way they've been handling Byron Nelson and Highland Park the last couple of weeks? The answer is no, but if I'm wrong on that, I think that's why I'm going to be wrong on this game. If their offensive line can at least just be neutral, you know, and make it a 50-50 game, DeSoto will get a play here and there, but they'll open up a play here and there, then I think South Lake Carroll has a really good chance. But the way I see the line play, that defensive line versus offensive line, I think that's how the game's going to go. And if DeSoto is able to do it, and they did it to Duncanville. I mean, if you can do that to Duncanville, I think you're going to be able to handle South Lake Carroll at the same time. I think that's the matchup I'm looking at. And this is a game that could get ugly if DeSoto is able to consistently do that, because I think they're going to be able to pound the ball very much like they did against DeSoto, 8 to 10 yards at a time. Now, all of a sudden, you're having to load the box up to respect that. And that's when DJ Bailey is able, you know, DJ Bailey worked when he's throwing those easy passes, those high probability passes. When you get 50-50 contested balls, that's where he starts to falter, and that's why he doesn't have many interceptions this year, because they don't put him in situations like that, because their line play is so good they don't need to have to put him in those situations.
And you can't simulate in practice what that's going to be like for the offensive line and stuff. Look, I mean, Riley Dodd's going to have him watching film for 4 hours straight, and they can be like, oh, wow, they're pretty fast. They can get through here. They're big. They're until you see it, until they pop you a couple times and you find yourself – you know, in 3rd and 18 in your first series, then you realize, okay, we're in for a battle. Maybe we weren't 100% ready, but we better get ready quick. You saw their offensive line. You told me about the passing game, but they ran for what, 6 touchdowns in that game against? Well, they did whatever they wanted against Byron Nelson. We had both talked about how they would be ready the second time around. They probably would win. I don't think either one of us thought it was going to be 56-7. I thought it would be like a 14-point game. I think you were a little bit higher than that. But now you're playing a DeSoto team. I'm not going to put DeSoto up by, you know, 21-35, but I can see that happening because it's a hard offense to stop and slow down there. And when they get 4 turnovers like they did against Cedar Hill, get short fields or even shorter fields when they run them back for touchdowns, then you're in a mess of hurt. So they got to make sure – no matter what, and Graham Knowles has been prone to making the turnover here and there against some good defenses. That's been prone to happen. You can't do that against this DeSoto team. They got to cut them turnovers down to 1, if that.
You know, and really walked, and DeSoto hasn't played any close games. I'm just kind of looking through their season, and that game against Duncanville was a 14 point game, but it was 21-14. It was one of those back and forths. It wasn't a 7-14 kind of a distribution. It was 14-21. Waxahachie was a 21 point game. Skyline, a 25 point game. They haven't played anybody close at the end of the day. Wiley East was kind of the crazy one where that was a 22 point game kind of unexpectedly. That was their hiccup. And they still won that game by 22. So, you know, you kind of joke about you wouldn't call it a 21-25 point game, or, you know, you wouldn't go that 21-35 point game. But in their head, that like, well, yeah. We beat Duncanville. We can do whatever we want to against them. So it's hard to pick against them. I'll probably pick them by 14. But I think the fascinating thing will be is, and I kind of alluded to this in the Duncanville thing, if it's a 7-14 point game where it's 7-14, then 7, and you're kind of battling back and forth, then you just need a mistake. Then you need a special team. Play, and I think that's where Carroll can take an advantage kind of a thing. If it's 14-21 kind of a thing, then Carroll probably is not going to have a chance to be competitive in the game, and they probably were never competitive in the game. Carroll's going to need quite a few things to go right to overcome that inherent 14-point deficit that I think DeSoto is going to have on the scoreboard when the game starts. You know, and I think it's even a mental thing. Riley Dodge is an incredible motivator. Watching him speak to his team, he is gifted at this. You know, it's like he says things that, you know, obviously coming from the Dodge family, he's an experienced, grizzled veteran. He just understands this business. He understands this football as a coach. He's an incredible coach. But DeSoto is just a different level. And we see what happens three out of the last 4 years, at least with Duncanville and South Lake Carroll. When they get hit in the face with that level of physicality, they didn't win the COVID year. But, you know, when they get hit with that level of physicality, it doesn't look good for them. And I think if it's close, it's going to be an upset. I think it's one of those things that Carroll keeps it close. They're probably going to find a way to win the game. But, you know, otherwise, it's just going to be another DeSoto 14-21 point kind of a victory.
Yeah, we might know something by halftime of that. It's interesting. A game like that, you've already said you think DeSoto's got a 14-point advantage coming into it. If South Lake wins the toss, do they elect to receive just to – I mean, I'm usually pro kick it off to the team so I get it in the second half. Do they elect to receive to get the thing going, or they kick off and maybe do an onside kick right off the bat to try to find some sort of quick emotional advantage or mental advantage?
I like the way you're thinking. I think if they win the toss, get the ball. Take the ball, go down there, get your score, get up 7-0, and maybe even go for the onside kick, like you said, if you don't win the toss and you don't get that option, because they have to have something good go for them early. And that's what they did against Byron Nelson. They jumped out on him early, and it was good night after that. But if DeSoto starts pounding him early, I think it's going to get away from him real quick.
So – the winner plays the winner of Summer Creek and Steele, and most of the back end of the year we've been talking about a Summer Creek DeSoto matchup in the state final, and I'm still with that. Nothing that happened last week's going to change me from thinking it's going to be Summer Creek and DeSoto. But for those that didn't see, Summer Creek they were down 11 with 6 minutes left and had to make a furious comeback to win that game. Matter of fact, they used a play where Hightower called a fake punt, then they called it off, and the guy that was getting the snap for the fake punt, this was when it was 31-28, they were leading, didn't get the signal, so he thought the fake punt was still on. Nobody else did. He made a run for it. They got stopped a short field, and then Summer Creek scores with 20 seconds left from the 1 yard line to win that thing. It doesn't take away from me thinking they're going to beat Steele, because I think they will, but it does. It just does tamper down that matchup with DeSoto. Now it looks like, to me, it feels like DeSoto is going to win this thing by a couple scores if they face each other in the final, because Summer Creek is now in the, I don't even want to say happy to be there, but first time syndrome. This is, okay, this is our first state title, or state, it'll be their first state title. It's their first state semifinal. These are all first for us. We're new to the game here. We're trying to figure this stuff out. I know we got a great team, but hey, this is new waters that we messed around in. So I think they get there. I think they win it to McLean Stadium this week against Steele, but after that, it's going to be a tough call there against DeSoto.
Help us understand, because you are our Houston guy. You know, if we want to put Summer Creek in the same genre of DeSoto or even South Lake Carroll, what is Hightower? What is our DFW equivalent of Hightower? So we kind of know what that game would have looked like if we're trying to, you know.
I feel like they're like North Crowley. They're like a North Crowley type squad. That's however you would feel about DeSoto playing North Crowley. I feel like that's what you'd feel DeSoto against Summer Creek. They have a solid running game. Their quarterback can make plays. Defense, they have defensive players that can make plays as well. But and just like North Crowley's kind of new after 10 years of being pretty bad, in the last 2 years they've been good with just the one loss on their ledger. This is kind of like Summer Creek. They're making their steps. They went from good to state's, you know, regional final. Now their first state semifinal. They're making steps, and they're not quite there yet. But their talent wise, I think it's just like a North Crowley.
But how would you rate Fort Bend Hightower? Because you know this is the team we hear of each and every. You know they seem to be like Westfield. They just make it here every week, and they gave them that level of game last week. So what would you?
Hightower was an athletic team. They had a lot of five stars, but not a lot of depth. So a team. I'm trying to think what team you would think of that has good skill position players, but you can't go much deeper than that.
We may not have had one. I mean, you know, good skill players, kind of Rockwall is what I think of. Decent skill players, but not much depth. But I was shocked, and I was shocked as that game was continuing to go on, and I was reading the score updates. It kind of took a little bit of the luster off of what I was hoping for Summer Creek. I think I picked Summer Creek by 30 because I wanted them to come into this game strong. And I wanted to be like, okay, your best against our best. Let's go. And now I'm just like, you know, there's going to be another Fed monster for DeSoto to devour instead of, okay, we're going to get a good state championship game. Let's see them at their best against DeSoto at their best.
We can hold out hope for that, but I still
don't like blowouts, Ward. I don't know if you don't
know
that.
I know you don't. But you also told me you weren't going to go this year, so maybe you won't have to see the blowout.
I watch it on TV, though.
Okay. Well, you can have a second TV on Home Improvement or whatever the heck you're going to be
Home Improvement. That's what I'm going to be watching. I'm going to have a split screen with DeSoto winning by 49 and Tim Allen talking to the guy behind the fence on Home Improvement.
Home Improvement. That's what you're going to be doing. That's what you'll be doing. Unbelievable you love these 90s shows. All right, you want to move on to 5A, Division 1. Alito Forney is what we got going on in Division 1 in the Dallas area here. By the way, like every year, just so you people that are playing in the head, we will have a Dallas representative all the games Saturday. We're guaranteed two of the three on Friday. Probably going to have two of the three on Thursday. So go buy your tickets, man, if you want to see DFW football because they're going to be in all these days for you. But the winner of Alito Forney is going to be in the late game on Friday night. So, and Alito got past Abilene. They beat them badly, but you weren't really impressed. There's still some stumbles in there that you like to get your Bearcat fans all riled up about.
It's not that I'm trying to get people mad, but Ward, how many games can you have five turnovers in and be okay? You know, I mean, there's going to be a point where that's going to catch up with you, and you see these trends. And, you know, if you have one game like Forney against Lone Star, they had five turnovers in that game. It was kind of a one-off, okay, you know, and something I kind of kept an eye on, and that's what it was. It was a one-off. But with Alito, you know, you're seeing this every week now where – kickoff return for a touchdown for the other team, a couple of turnovers here and there. It's just not been a clean game. And if they play the team that plays the perfect game, that plays the Fort Bend Hightower kind of game against you, and then all of a sudden you get the ball back and they don't make the mistake and you get that extra first down, you get that one play. I think of that South Oak Cliff game where South Oak Cliff was introduced there. They made the one play against Alito that game. And, you know, there was like a fumble and they were able to get that fourth down play and they beat Alito. And if Alito continues to play these games where they're going to have multiple turnovers, they're a beatable team. But at the same time, you know, it's like the South Oak Cliff and Lovejoy game. They could beat Forney 49-0, and I would not be surprised because are that good of a team. They're that good offensively and defensively to where if we get the best version of Alito, you're going to all of a sudden we're going to be like, whoa, you know, we're going to have a little 90s TV moment ourselves and go, that's the Alito we were expecting to have and expecting to see all year, but we haven't seen it. And same thing with Forney now. Forney at their best, I think, is an incredible team. But there's something every single week. It's either inconsistent quarterback play or inconsistent play calling or a special teams gap or a defensive, a fourth down penalty to extend a drive to where they are just – giving up points. And I just don't understand how Forney can be as good as we saw them against Lone Star, overcome five turnovers, only get 240 yards against Lancaster, and still find a way to beat them. If you give up 510 yards, let's ignore the 40 points. I'll give you that, but you've got some overtime, you know, stat padding in there. But you're not stat padding your yardage numbers, because you're only getting 25 yards in the overtime session. They still gave up 510 yards to Lancaster. And Lancaster is a very good team. They deserve to be there. Alito's better. And Alito is more explosive. And to me, it's one of those games that if you get Alito playing their best game and Forney playing their best game, Alito's going to win this game by three touchdowns. What? Like, the perfect formula for Alito to not win this game is play like they've been playing, give them four or five turnovers, and then Forney gives you their best game. That's the only way I can see Alito losing this game. But the way that Alito has been playing, you can see it now. You can see the pathway for it. Whereas previously, I don't think I could have seen the pathway. That being said, there's more pathways for Alito to win this game than Forney to win this game. So I'm going to take Alito to win the game. But I see the pathway. Yeah. And I don't want to see the pathway for Alito. I want Alito to be so good, we're just here like, there's no way they're going to win this game. But right now, I see the way.
It is there. It is there. I mean, there's something to be said about being absolutely worked on the stat page, and then that team that worked you is putting up their pads for the winter, and you're playing on. They have the stick-to-itiveness. They have the resiliency to get through these type games, and they do have the defense that if they do give up four turnovers, two of them can be turned into points immediately, and the other ones put them in deep in the turnover. So you're exactly right. If they get the turnovers, that path is there for them. But at some point, no matter how resilient you are, that stuff's going to run out on you. You're going to give up the 2-point conversion to Lone Star, and you're going to let all those stats that Lancaster put up on you end up being four scores better than you. And Alito's the kind of team that can do it to you, just like you said. So that game's down in Midlothian, by the way, Midlothian Athletic Complex, 7:30 Friday night. That's another good one to go down to if you're not going to the 5A Division 2-1, which we'll talk about a little bit later, because I know you want to talk about Veterans Memorial in Smithson Valley, because when you got a chance to get new blood, all of a sudden my man Dixie perks up. You want to see some new blood out there at AT&T.
I do, and Smithson Valley to me is a scary team for Alito specifically, because they are the kind of team that they're not great, but they're playing, you know, it's the term, our term of the year, and that term is the potential ceiling. And a team, when you're playing at your potential ceiling, you're playing at your best each and every week. And Smithson Valley has been right there every single week. They're not better than Alito talent-wise. They're not even close to Alito talent-wise. They've just been maximizing their potential each and every week. Brownsville veteran Memorial, I don't think, is going to be very competitive against Smithson Valley. And for me, that kind of team, Smithson Valley, has been the kind of team, I think, of College Station a few years ago that stole a game against Alito. That's the kind of team that, if Alito is not playing at that high level, can really jump up and beat Alito if Alito wins the game, which I think they will. So I think I'm kind of cheering for Smithson Valley, because that's going to push Alito to play a much better football game, because they can't mess around against Smithson Valley and win that game. You get Alito at their best against anybody just about in football, you know, outside of Duncanville and DeSoto. Alito is probably going to win that game. But right now, Alito's just playing with their food and still winning convincingly. So their fans are like, well, you know, why do you need the style points? I just want to see Alito at their best. I want to see Alito play the kind of game we know they can play. And again, it would not surprise me at all. There is like 0% chance. I will shave my head if Forney beats Alito 49-0. But I could see a pathway to where Alito could beat Forney 49-0, and it would be like, you know, I could see it. But Forney is just can't do that, you know. But Alito can, and I want to see Alito give us that level of play, because that would be fun. I just want to see it. I want to see good teams playing good football in December, and Alito just hasn't given it to us yet.
And I want to see a bald ass Dixie. So let's go Forney. No, just kidding.
I'm good with that.
I don't need to see a bald Dixie. That might be a scary sight. All right, 5A Division II. Frisco Emerson against South Oak Cliff at the Star. Dixie will be there. Somebody stop by and say hi to him and tell him where he's been wrong and everything. But the Emerson crowd likes you, because you always seem to pick them to win, and you always seem to be right, except for twice. But other than that, you've been right. Emerson is going further, obviously, than they've ever been because it's year number two, but they're into the deep end now, and that's where the Sharks are. And if Jason Todd doesn't have a group of Sharks out there ready to bite, then I don't know who does. What is the path for Emerson to win this thing? Because is it because we talked about the secondary at South Oak Cliff that struggled a little bit against Melissa? Is it Hawkins with his arm or is it Hawkins with his legs?
Jesus. Yeah, that's about it. Prayer and Jesus is your outlet to there. Unless you're at Emory Wiener, then that's a different theological discussion at that point. But at the end of the day, I don't see a pathway for Emerson to win this game. You know, it's like the rant I went on. I could see the pathway for Forney because of the way Alito is playing. The way South Oak Cliff is playing, you get the Midlothian Heritage version of them, they're still going to win. You get the you get the Melissa version of them, they're still going to win. You get the Lovejoy version of them, they're going to win by a lot. You're going to see a lot of second-teamers in the second half. It's just which version of that. I think you're going to see some more points from Emerson than you got against Lovejoy, but I think Emerson's just happy to be here at that point. And they're just, from 1 to 22, they're not going to be able to compete against South Oak Cliff. I think South Oak Cliff, if you get them at their best, they're going to win like a 63-14 game. If they mess around a little bit, which I don't think they will at this point, it's probably still going to be like 42-30 or something. I mean, it's just how bad they're going to beat them from my perspective.
Yeah, that's probably why they didn't balk at giving Emerson theoretically a home game, because it's like wherever you want to play it, dude, we'll play it on the moon if you want to. I'll go ahead and take you out there.
And I don't know this, but I bet there's a financial consideration to that, because I bet they get the star for free because of that. Like, oh, we'll get a bigger take for our athletic office. We'll go beat you, bring all of your fans, we'll bring ours, and we'll take the money back to Dallas ISD and go to AT&T and get ready for a state championship. And I do the same thing. If they're going to be like, you can play here for free, okay. Yeah. Happy to do it.
Happy to play. Yeah, I think it's – they're going to score a lot, I think, against Emerson. I think Emerson's defense is probably going to give up a lot there. They're going to have to rely a lot on Michael Hawkins, and that's just might be too much to ask for that guy to piece apart the Sock defense, not just once, twice, but like 6-7 times in order to keep going in this thing. So it's going to be difficult. Winner of that game moves on to play PNG who's PNG? Or Liberty Hill. Liberty Hill or PNG, which is a rematch of last year. And then if PNG pulls it off, it'd be a rematch of the state final if they end up playing Sock again. Those two have met each other again. But do you have any thoughts on that before I talk a little bit about Port Neches Groves?
You know, I think the metaphor you gave was actually a brilliant one right before the end. I was thinking of Gunner and Jacksboro, and a lot of people thought that Jacksboro would be able to score against Gunner, but could they score 8 to 9 times like you're going to need to get to beat Gunter? And sure enough, Jacksboro gave Gunner a really good game, even a bit of a better game than we thought, but they just couldn't outscore him. And I think that's very much the parallel you gave with Emerson. I think Emerson at their best is going to be able to put some points up against the Sock defense, but they're not going to be able to outscore Sock. And at the end of the day, that's their Achilles heel. That they, as good as Hawkins is, he isn't good enough to get those 8 to 9 touchdowns that they're going to have to get in a shootout. So I'm curious your thoughts about PNG, because you got Liberty Hill, one of those teams that's playing stylistically a very hard to defend kind of a football game, against PNG that seems very motivated to get back here, like they feel like they have something to prove. Is this a PNG team that's even better than last year, or is it just a result of their path that they're here?
From what I've seen with PNG, their offensive line has been dominant. They've been riding the offensive line. They scored the first three possessions against Huntsville, and each of the three possessions averaged nine plays. So they're just working that defense with their humongous offensive line, because they have a sophomore quarterback in there as well. They're playing the Liberty Hill team they beat by 4 scores last year, 42-14. So they're going to rely heavily on the offensive line and scoring quickly, and then just maintaining it, just beating down on the defensive line. And that's their path to get. They're another defense that's thrown up 5 shutouts as well. So they've done their job on defense as well. So it's a very physical team, 13 straight wins this season. They feel like a team that can beat Liberty Hill, but when I see a sophomore quarterback, that makes me a little bit nervous. But then when you talk about an experienced offensive line, it doesn't make me as nervous as I originally was.
you know, and you kind of gave the parallel when you were talking about Coach Todd earlier in our show, that you're like, he just doesn't care. They can get behind. It can happen. Yeah. And last year, like the same thing against PNG, they got behind. It's like none of us in the press box, we really thought that PNG had a chance, even though they were up by two scores. And I bet on the sideline, they were the same way. And I think they're just going to look at PNG as another obstacle, as, you know, yeah, you might even get up on us. You might even bring your 50,000 on Saturday afternoon and fill up your side of the stadium and bring everybody from the Golden Triangle. We're good. You know, like they're not going to be bothered by it. And I think that's a psychological edge that Coach Todd and his coaching staff has instilled in South Oak Cliff, to where even a chaotic crowd against them is not going to bother them. They're just going to be like, cool.
It may even motivate them, to be honest with you. It may actually excite them, because it's not just Todd. I mentioned Todd, but it's the players. They come out with the intimidating presence. Like, it's not, you know, you have to get through us and nobody's going to get through us. So here we are. What do you got? Oh, that's real nice. I like the two shots you gave us. We're down two scores, but it's about to get ugly, because like I said earlier, you're in the deep end now and we know how to swim, and it's going to be tough for you.
Yeah, and we could have a whole show just me praising what South Oak Cliff has done. And you got the haters out there on message boards talking about recruiting and this and that. I don't personally care if you put a DISD all-star team. Let's say SOC is the DISD all-star team, but every of the best players, and you put them on there, it's still what they're doing on the coaching level. It is still what they are doing. It's special. They've made a culture over there. We've seen Skyline teams with 8 to 10 D1 players lose, not even make the playoffs. So there's a culture there that they've built, and South Oak Cliff is just living their best life right now, and it is fun to watch. We are seeing something special, and you can't even explain it, because it's something we've never seen before. And people are taking pot shots here and there at them, but you can't really explain how great it is, because it's a first. You know, it's like, you know, we're seeing the Neil Armstrong, and we just have to admire it and wonder how long the moonwalk is going to last, because it's lasting for a while.
And it's not like he's not hearing these things. He hears it, probably writes it down in his little notebook over here, but he doesn't get crazy about it and start attacking. He'll give a subtle dig here and there after the game. Maybe on a Sunday podcast, he'll give a dig here and there. But it's nothing that makes him not sleep at night and just gets him so furious. Why do they hate us? Well, they hate you because they ain't you. So that's where you're out of there at SOC, and they could be there for a three-peat. Let's move to 4A Division I. Those Anna Coyotes are in the final here, state semifinal for the first time in the history of their team. I remember at the beginning of the year, they're playing Decatur. It's two DFW teams going at it. That'll be Friday night up at Collins Complex. I'll actually be there at that one, because everybody took the other games, so I'm going to go see what's going on with Anna. But anyway, we're talking about Anna. We didn't rank them that high, as high as they wanted to be at the beginning of the year. We didn't. And I think, I'm not going to speak for you, but for me, it's because the 3,000 or 4,000 yard passer Bullock had graduated, and it's like, well, who do we have to replace him? Z'Andre Williams has really played some good ball. As a sophomore, he's really impressed. He's been able to manage the game. He's been able to use his legs, find Emmers, find his receivers all over the place. You got to be kind of proud of the way he's taken over, because that's the reason why I didn't rank him high. And now that all he's done is proved me wrong.
You know, I really don't regret where I ranked him, and I think it actually kind of proved out as the season happened that we were kind of right on that. I mean, they lost to Salina in the regular season. They kind of struggled at times. And I at least want to apologize for one thing. People might be a little bit confused. Last week, I did come on this podcast, and I picked Stephenville to win the game. And I thought Stephenville would beat them, and I explained the defensive side of the ball. Then I went on another podcast, Sideline to Sideline, where we were talking more of the small school in-depth thing. And they're a little bit more knowledgeable on the small schools, and I gave my rationale there, and all of a sudden Terry Bennett, the host of the show, says, well, you know, this guy's injured, you know, this running back is out for Stephenville, and all of a sudden I started reprocessing it. I'm like, yeah, I think Anna's going to win this game, you know, after kind of hearing, getting a little bit more knowledge. And like, I was on the air giving the spiel for why Stephenville is going to win. And he shut me down and changed my mind right there. So when I did my picks, which went on our website, I actually took Anna. So people are like, you know, what happened to Diggs? You know, he was talking about, why is he not being contrite on this? I got information. I got my mind changed. I'm very open-minded about these things, but I'm still not very high on Anna at the end of the day. To me, that was still more what Stephenville didn't have and what Stephenville, was struggling with more than Anna just, you know, going out there and destroying them, which they did at the end of the day. But, Stephenville had some big question marks there. Decatur, I feel like, is playing their best football right now. So I might go on another podcast board and change my mind, but I'm, at least as of Monday night, I'm going to be taking Decatur. We'll see if a Thursday the pick sticks or not after I go through all of my research and processing at the end of the day. But Decatur, to me, when you look at where they were, they've taken a couple of losses. They played a very tough schedule. They've already played Anna, and they lost 37-30. They also lost to Stephenville in a shootout, like 52-51. But they took those losses and they got better. They kind of remind me of South Lake Carroll, how they've taken those losses and learned from it and gotten better. And Anna, I feel like if Anna makes it to the state championship game, I'm looking at Anna and I'm just like, man, how did they do that? I mean, they beat Panther Creek on a Hail Mary. They didn't have to go through Salina. They caught Stephenville on a downside. They caught La Vega not at their best. They just found a way there, and they're probably clipping this stuff, and then I'm still getting all of the wins at the end of the day with them. But I think Decatur has improved more from that game than Anna has. I feel like Anna's regressed a little bit from that. I think Anna started out hot, and part of that was injuries because they lost Jacob Emmers for a good chunk of the season. But he's back in there and a big difference maker. But Decatur is big on the lines. They're physical. I think they look more like Paris, and Paris gave them that struggle in week 11 or week 10 or 11 of the regular season. I think Decatur is going to win a 7-point game in this game.
Crew over there.
Anna hater still. Anna hater.
My crew over there at Coyote Vision, we did a story with last week. It's busy right now in the middle of the night cutting up your stuff and putting together a sweet video to get them all pumped up to come out there, beat them, and then have Coach Parr smack you across the mouth when they do. But we'll see what happens because you're right. I saw Decatur last year, I believe it was against China Spring, and they gave them all they could handle. It was whatever round that was where it was foggy as all get out. So it must have been the state semifinal last year. And they gave them all they could handle for a half until they kind of pulled away. So Decatur is a DFW team, but since they're got a little bit of distance, you may not see it on our screen that much, but make sure you watch this week because they surely will be on there, and it's going to be great video because, boy, the Whistler was shooting it, so it's got to be good. I mean,
got to be good.
There you go.
Remember, Decatur is one of those teams like Cedar Hill, started out 1-4. You know, they took their licks, but they got better as the season continued. And now they're playing much better defensively, and the offense is still where it's been. They're a very tough team to beat. I mean, Anna's going to get their points against Decatur, but I think it's going to be those one or two stops that Decatur's defense, the improvement from Decatur's defense is going to be that difference late in the game. They're going to get that final stop to get that 42-35 kind of a win.
What do you know about the other side of the bracket, Tyler Chapel Hill against Davenport? Give me a little lowdown on that joint.
Well, I like how you called it. You called him Davenport, and I learned today that we should just call him Chapel Hill because Chapel Hill, Texas, is the city that Chapel Hill High School is in. And just like we shouldn't call him San Antonio Davenport, we shouldn't call him Tyler Chapel Hill either. So we got Chapel Hill against Davenport. I like being smartened up by Rich.
I know you do.
Go on these different podcasts. You get to learn about different – like they're joking. It's like, we know you're from out of town if you call him Tyler Chapel Hill. I'm like, okay. I guess you're calling him San Antonio Davenport at the same time. Right. But Chapel Hill, I remember Chapel Hill and Stephenville at the Star in the COVID year in 2020, and they had a bunch of freshmen playing on that team, and they just ran out of steam against Stephenville. In the last couple of years, they've made it to this round, and then something has happened. Last year was Bernie, and they get hit in the mouth, and they can't overcome that. Davenport, I feel like, has a little bit of that happy to be here. Whereas you've got Chapel Hill, who's been this close, you know, and lost the last 3 years, and they're ready to crest over that hill. I think this is the year that Chapel Hill crests over that hill and gets to the state championship. And I think they will be a favorite over whoever wins out of Ann and Decatur.
See, for the purposes of my show, I don't actually mind the fact I put Tyler Chapel Hill or San Antonio Davenport because people around here don't know who I'm talking about, know how. So take that back to your other podcast and say, hey, listen, we got to let these people know where they're from, man. give him a little bit of
put it East Texas Chapel Hill versus Central Texas Davenport.
Oh, your brother. I'll just do the other way. All right, 4A Division 2. Got Gilmore against Glen Rose. You saw Glen Rose go deep last year, and I don't know if we both expected him to go deep this year, but Gilmore is now taking on – or
Gilmer.
Sorry.
Are you watching the Gilmore Girls on, like,
the Gilmore
right now? Are you and the boys, like, watching Gilmore
Girls? Sorry, and the funny thing, I was about ready to rag on the fact that I heard somebody call cartilage last week on another podcast, and I was thinking about that, and then I started talking about Gilmore, so maybe I can keep my mouth shut. Gilmore is playing the team that beat the team that never loses, which is Carthage, or cartilage, or patella tendon, or whatever you want to call it. But they're coming up here to play Glen Rose up at Prosperous Stadium up there. Does Glen Rose have a fighter's chance to get past Gilmore to get into that state final?
Man, this is one of those games where both teams should not be here. You know, if you look at the rosters they have, both, you know, this is basically, I gave this metaphor on the dump board, and I think you'll appreciate it as a little college basketball. This is like we got an 8 seed versus a 9 seed in the right to go to the Final Four. Mm-hmm. You know, neither of these teams should be here. They both had some pretty nice upsets to get here. And now we've got this game where one of these lower seeded teams is going to make it to the Final Four, the national championship, or in this case, the UIL state championship, and neither are expected to be here. And both of them, they had to beat Duke and 1980s Georgetown to get here. You know, we got Carthage as your 1980s Georgetown, and West Plains is going to run the thing as Duke. And now you got, you know, we got Iona versus Seton Hall over here for the right to go to the state championship. And we're trying to figure out how this happened and trying to figure out, you know, which one is for real? Which one is going to be legit? Which one is going to stay at that high level? I hope we get a fantastic game. This is a game I truly don't know what's going to happen because I didn't expect either of them to be here. But at the end of the day, I think Gilmer has more talent. I think Gilmer, what Gilmer did against Carthage to beat not only a more athletic team, but to beat a legacy team is more impressive than beating a new team out of West Texas that just had a little bit more talent than they did. So I got to stick with Gilmer, but I genuinely don't know what's going to happen in this game because Glen Rose had played out of their mind against West Plains. And if they give us that effort against Gilmer, you never know.
First of all, I love college basketball, Dixie. It's my favorite of your many personalities. But in your analysis there, or in your comparison, that Iona team, Glen Rose, beat Duke West Plains by 32 in football, which would be 60-something in basketball. So this Duke team that you were talking about must have had some foul trouble or something.
Now they're that good. They just got run out of the arena by Glen Rose, and you know the shots weren't falling as the case may be, and you got a 101-37 game on you, and you're just like, wow, Iona, that's impressive. That's how impressed I am with what they did against West Plains. Even the Wichita Falls guy who was, like, you know, giving us commentary on the game, he's like, man, this is a little bit unexpected right here. And it is unexpected, you know, and same thing, Gilmer beating Carthage. And not only Gilmer beating Carthage, but Gilmer had an opportunity to win that game in regulation, right, made a mental error, let Carthage back into the game, and then they still won it in overtime. I mean, that's just incredible. The fact that they were able to overcome that and still win the game. So kudos to both teams for getting here. Let's make sure we say that. Right. One of you will be playing in the state championship. I'm putting my chips toward Gilmer right now, but the fact that Glen Rose has been looking they were here last year against Carthage, yeah, and they lost that heartbreaker game, mm-hmm, that I was at the Stars. Graduation Friday. Every time it's graduation Friday, I'm going to the Star. It'll be Emerson and South Oak Cliff this year for my graduation Friday. But watching Glen Rose fumble that play away with all of that senior talent, and now they're back here, they have to be like, man, this is a redemption story. So they're going to give Gilmer their best punch, but I think Gilmer's just got a little bit too much.
I wonder how many of those graduated seniors are going to be back in the sideline, because that happens a lot when a senior group takes a devastating loss. They get back to the same thing. They're kind of playing it for the graduating class.
Yeah.
They bring a mess of them back, and they're on the sidelines just hooping and hollering. if it was Stevens Earl, they'd be shaking something to drive me completely nuts. But it's Glen Rose, so maybe they won't get the shake on. So
dinosaurs out there. They'll get their little T-Rexes out there. Fossil Ridge Park. And
roar! Hey, what? So are you saying Belleville and Wimberley is your de facto state title game?
Or? I do. So you tell me about this Belleville team that all of a sudden, you know, they got down last week against Jasper like 7-0. I'm like, uh-oh, you know, this is the comeuppance for them. And then they just bored
back. That's right. They won by 24, which was their tightest game of the year, which is
they let them score first and then went 31-0. Like the Mavericks had a 30-0 run this past week. You got Belleville gave them a 31-0 run, and that was it.
It's still crazy to hear that 24 points is the closest anybody's come to this team. They haven't played much during the regular season, that's for sure. But in the playoffs, they're still stomping teams out. It's like you said, 10-7 at the half, and then they just stepped on it in the second half. That slot T, if you're not prepared, if you haven't practiced against it, you're not prepared for it, they will get three touchdowns just on – I mean, you're going to prepare for it, but you've never seen it. They're going to get three touchdowns on you just from the crazy fakes and misdirection of that offense as it is. I told you last week, I don't shoot that offense from down low because I get faked every time. I just got to be up top so you can see these plays developed. Maybe I'll put Ted Madden on that game if they play at State. Ted, get your tripod and come on out to State, brother. But
it's down, Teddy. Up top, Teddy.
They got one of those athletes that they just keep on the field at all times. D.D. Murray is his name. He's running back that scored over 25, 30 touchdowns. But he's also a heck of a defensive back, and he made one of the better plays of the game where they actually tested him, which he doesn't get tested that often, and he wrestled that ball away. Unlike the South Lake Carroll Byron Nelson game first time around, he actually did make the interception and pull it away, and then three plays later, he took off for a 73-yard touchdown run. I'm telling you, the fakes, they've got it down to a precision to the point where you really have to be locked in on your zones and your roles or whatever, or you're done. It's over with. So that's what they do. And then the defense, like I said, we said last week, six shutouts. They've given up 7 points or less in like six. What do they got? 14 games and 11 of their 14 games, 12 of their 14 games has been 7 points or less. They just don't give up points and they score a ton of them. So it's hard to imagine. But Wimberley's got the pedigree. They've been here before. They know where it's at. This is Belleville's first state semifinal since 2012. They've never been to the state title game. So what do you know? Do you know anything about Wimberley? What can you tell me about them and how they might match up there? They're also playing in Pflugerville.
Well, usually whatever team is coming out of this, is running a slot T or wing T, so they know how to shut that down, and you know they played against it. But at the end of the day, Wimberley is that legacy team out of Central Texas that finds its way, you know, this far deep, you know, like Westlake or Lake Travis every year, and they're going to be a very hard out. And I think they're going to probably give Belleville their closest game because they're going to be prepared probably better than everybody else. They've probably been coaching this up for a little while. I still think from what I keep hearing and seeing in Belleville, I think they're got to be the favorites.
Yeah, they're just an amazing offense right there, and defense for that matter. 3A Division I, you won't be late to this game because it's on a Thursday. They don't throw no graduations up on Thursdays, or maybe they do. I don't know anything about college graduations except for the ones I was at. Brock against Malakoff.
You graduated from college, Ward?
I did, buddy.
What's your GPA?
Took me about... Let's talk about Brock Malakoff before we go to GPA. I was told just to get the diploma and you'd be all right. Don't worry about what the GPA is. So I went with that.
When you had your interview at Game Day Productions, did they ask
you? They didn't ask me the GPA. They just said, okay. Do you have a diploma? I said, yeah, here it is. And they said, what's that little small ass number at the bottom? I said, don't worry about it. Here's the diploma. We're good.
My shoe size. I'm not
exactly. Kidding. Exactly. All right, Brock Malakoff. Tell me what you think about that one because you saw Brock last week, right? You took a journey.
I did. I saw Brock against Paradise. Austin Iglesias played the game with a high ankle sprain. He was in a boot all week, and I think that was a factor that he couldn't run the ball. Brock won that game 21-7. Malakoff, the way they beat Winsboro, they're playing at a very high level on the great football on the offense and the defensive side. They're holding opponents to about 15 points a game while scoring about 50 points a game. I think they're going to beat Brock this week. I think Malakoff is the answer to Brock. I think it's going to be very much like Gunter. They're going to hit Brock, and I don't know if Brock's going to be able to respond. I think Malakoff not only wins this game, but they might run away with it. I think that Brock just hasn't quite figured it out offensively. You know, like I talked about with Alito and Forney about those consistency and turnovers. Brock is consistently giving you one or two turnovers a game. They got to go plus two and get a special teams play to eke out a 7-point win over Malakoff. If the Brock that's been playing right now that's going to give you one or two turnovers against the way this Malakoff team has been playing, they're probably going to lose by 28.
And that's when both me and you will be at. So we'll discuss what goes on in the first half up in
the pathway. I see the pathway for Brock. It's just going to be a hard pathway.
It's going to be a hard pathway.
They got to stop the turnovers and generate some.
The road less traveled is what they're going to have to take, right, to win that joint?
I know that's cliche, but at the end of the day, you know, when you see a team consistently have one or two turnovers a game for 2 years, it's more than just a coincidence at that point.
The phrase at the end of the day is also cliche. You hear that too much, so get that out of your vocabulary.
It does, cliche, but like – the thing I love about DeSoto right now is DeSoto's not giving you those one or two turnovers. You know, I was looking for something this Friday on the dump to get to needle DeSoto about and say, okay, DeSoto, this is what you got to look at. I looked. I can't find anything. DeSoto is playing elite level football at a high level. Brock is playing really good football and, you know, out-talenting teams, but they're making mistakes, kind of like what Alito is. And maybe it's a Parker County issue. I don't know. Turnovers. Maybe we got a Pepperidge Farm factory out there in Parker County. They've got all kinds of apple turnovers here. An apple turnover for you, an apple turnover for everybody in Parker County. But Brock has got to quit making the mistakes. And even against Paradise, they got a – Paradise, the very first play, got an onside kick against them. Then one, Brock's first possession, they're throwing interceptions. You can't give up those two or three big plays in a game and beat Malakoff.
Well, their opponent will be Franklin or Edna. I'm going to bring that up, leave that up to you to analyze, even though we are covering it in the Houston area, because Edna, well, as we all know, the Houston teams drop like flies, and now we're reaching way out to the outskirts, and we're pulling in Edna. We're pulling them in.
We're not going to call Beaumont.
Oh, no. Edna's out there. They don't even get they may have a TV, but they got to have the rabbit ears. Beaumont's got their own little station. I'm not going into this with you again. We went through this already.
I'm thinking Franklin.
Okay. There you go. Franklin. That's his in-depth analysis on that one.
Aunt Franklin. Edna is on top of the car on National Lampoon's Vacation, but she's dead. Now we just got to figure out where Aunt Edna is going to be left.
And Edna's going to be left with her Uncle friend.
Uncle Franklin is taking care of business. That's all I have to say.
And Edna's going to be left with her friend Big Sandy, and they're all going to just hang out together somewhere as the season's over for them.
Maybe with Katie.
You talked about this other game in 3A Division 2, by the way, for the longest time. We've been waiting for this matchup, Gunner and Canadian. Tell me what you think about this one. It's out in Abilene Christian. It's probably the only Dallas area game that at this moment I'm not going to be able to get for a show because it's just too far away. And nobody wants to shoot it. I got to call Butters up and get him out there. But go ahead and talk to me about
that. Dealing to find highlights for this game. I'm nervous about Gunter after the Jacksboro game. Nervous about Gunter because there have been three games now where teams with decent offenses were able to generate some points against them. And now it gives you pause because Canadian is going to be that team that's going to have a decent offense. I think Gunner's offense is just a little bit better right now. I think we're going to have probably your de facto state championship game. Give me Gunter 35-28 over Canadian. I think it's going to be a barn burner, but I'm going to take Gunner, but I think it's going to be close and competitive.
And who were they facing in the final, Dangerfield or Tidehaven?
I think Dangerfield just has too much athleticism. I'm going to take them. I think we're going to have a Dangerfield-Gunter state championship game in 3A.
What's going on here? Hey, is Toler going to the state title game? Talk to me, man. They're playing in the state semi.
As of right now, my heart is sad because I'm cheering for them, Ward. I'm cheering. Let's go, Toler. But I think they're going to be an underdog in both these games. Yeah. If they win, they're going to have to pull an upset. The way what Stratford did to the state champion Hawley last week, beating them by 5 touchdowns, is something that has to catch your eye. And then we have Marlin and Toler, and that game was only a 3-score game, but they struggled at times. They struggled opening lines. And then I think of Toler, how bad they looked against Crawford last year. And like when you get a good enough defense that can shut them down, and you got Peyton Brown, who's still not 100%, I think Stratford, unfortunately, has the kind of defense that can shut Toler down. I gotta take Stratford. I'm cheering for Toler though.
And the winner takes on Timpson or Ganado.
That's Timpson, and Timpson has probably got the best odds to win out of everybody because they got Terry Bussey. And when you're in 2A and you got the best player on the field, it's very hard to win.
Ganado, you know, is another team we're pulling in. We're pulling them in for this last week. We actually did a story on Ganado. Ganado banned. All I can tell you is they play a mean trombone out there. I don't know nothing about it.
We'll probably get flags thrown on them at the state championship. We know that they're no fun league.
Oh, boy. So do you want to try to mention any of these? The smallest of the small?
Collinsville lost, so we have no more DFW area teams left. I'm taking Albany. I think we're going to have Albany and Mardigan and probably Albany another state championship. But no DFW area schools in 2A D2. My Celeste side of the family is sad that Collinsville couldn't happen. But not only did Collinsville not play with Albany, they were not competitive with them. Albany was probably offended by this podcast last week when I was talking about Collinsville and an upset. Of all the games last week that I whiffed on, that was probably my biggest whiff, was I took Collinsville to beat Albany by 2 touchdowns, and then Albany wins by 6 touchdowns. Can't do that, Ward. Can't do that.
Can't do it. Hey, before we go, just for people that want to see new teams in there, there's not a really high chance of this happening in 6A through 5A in the Dallas area. But out of those four games, who has the best chance of pulling off an upset and being a new team in the state final game?
Probably Brownsville Veterans Memorial. I think they have a decent chance. Cibolo Steel has you talked about them in Summer Creek. Cibolo Steel's been here, and they play DeSoto every now and then in non-district. So, you know, they're used to traveling, so I wouldn't even really consider them a new team. Summer Creek would be, a legitimate new team as far as that goes. Liberty Hill's been here. PNG was here last year. But Brownsville Veterans Memorial, I think, is the one team you want to kind of keep an eye on if you want a truly new voice out here. And if you got PNG and Brownsville Veterans Memorial bringing those crowds out there, they would probably have a AT&T Stadium takeover, because we love our football. We have the best football there, but they have the best fan bases down there, and they've been hungry for this, and they will travel for it.
Well, let me dig even deeper for wisdom of the four DFW 5A and 6A teams. Which has the best chance of pulling out the miraculous upset and getting the state final and knocking off the repeat players from last year?
I think of the four, Forney has the best opportunity because they have as good of talent as they have. But Carroll, I mean, the way Carroll looked at Byron Nelson and just destroyed them, but that's nothing against South Lake Carroll. It's just I think DeSoto is that team. But Aledo, the way they've been playing the mistakes, that's why I feel like that Forney has the best chance of the four. Soto's just not making mistakes right now. If you can't make mistakes, how are you going to beat them, right? So I think of those four, I would rank them probably Forney, then Carroll, then North Crowley, and then Emerson. I think Emerson probably has the least chance of the four to make it to the state championship.
I can dig it. There you hear it, man. All right, go out and see some games. I'll see you Thursday. I'll see you Saturday.
We'll see you then. And Saturday, I'm gonna be jetting out because it is volleyball season again, Ward. We're excited about it. The team Blaze is back playing some volleyball, and we got a volleyball game at 5 p.m. on Saturday. So this game cannot go to overtime. It has just got to be great football, and then we got to get great volleyball in. So we're excited about Team Digs. And hold on, Ward. Don't cut this off. We're an hour into the podcast. I have not mentioned Plano East. Let's talk about that Plano East basketball team.
I don't mind Arkansas talking about
this weekend, and they're the only Texas team. So if they can go into Arkansas and win a tournament in Arkansas.
I don't mind talking about Plano East hoops, because that's something to – I mean, the football team was great as well. I mean, they made it to the postseason, but – that team's really got a chance, dude. So you should be talking about them. Maybe
we're excited.
It's probably going to make you talk about starting a basketball podcast. Except you'd only talk about one team.
Seton Hill.
Seton Hall. But that would be the only team you talk about is Plano East.
That's the merger of Cedar Hill and Seton Hall. You put them together, you got Seton Hill right there.
Seton Hill. Nobody wants to die on Seton Hill. All right, brother, we will see you next week where we break down all the state championship games. And if you want to see somebody else break them down, this Sunday morning at 10 a.m., we're going to have Rodney Webb from Rockwell Heath on the show breaking them all down. So we'll see you then.
See you down the road.